Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archive. I've interviewed a wide range of film industry professionals throughout my different shows. Well, today I'm interviewing legendary screenwriter John Rousseau, who co-wrote Night of the Living Dead, among other films, and he's directed as well, and he's going to be joining us momentarily on the program. So we're going to be able to ask him about Night of the Living Dead, which prompted a lot of other zombie films. Those of you that are zombie fans out there certainly know his name very well. He worked with George Romero and Russ Schreiner on Night of the Living Dead, and he's worked with them in other films as well. In addition to doing a lot of his own horror films, which you're probably familiar with, like Midnight, for example, and Midnight 2, he's working on a new feature soon called Escape of the Living Dead. We're going to find out more about if that's happening or not. I think I have him on the line right now. Let's see.
Yes.
Okay, John, are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Well, coincidentally, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just heard you say that I was working on a new project called Escape of the Living Dead, and coincidentally, that's what I'm doing this morning, is working on the novel, which is I have to deliver to Kensington Books by October, so I was heavily into it all morning. As far as the film goes, it's been tied up by a Hollywood company for 2 years now. And I had put together a good cast, really great cast, Christina Kleebe and Tony Todd, and Gunnar Hansen, Kate Hodder, and so on. And I'm to direct it if it gets done. It was supposed to get done right away, and instead they pushed a couple movies ahead of it for some reason, and I can't do anything about it but wait.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what, before we get more into that, I want to go back in time to Night of the Living Dead, which you're probably best known for. And I know you collaborated with George and Russ on the film, and you were actually the person that came up with the idea of the zombies being flesh eaters. What were you watching as a child that prompted you to think of such a thing?
Well, I saw just about every movie that came into town in those days, my old hometown in Clareton, Pennsylvania. Was a big steel town and a very vibrant place with a hefty population and three movie theaters and so on. And the pictures changed twice a week, and I saw just about everything. It didn't cost much. If you were younger than 12, it only cost 14 cents. If you were 12, once you turned 12, it was 50 cents, and that wasn't a lot of money even back then. So, and I went to see every horror films and always hope to see something good, and most of them weren't, except for, you know, the classics like Dracula and Frankenstein and even Abbott and Lou Costello Meet Frankenstein or Meet Dracula. Those were funny and scary in their own little way. But then later on, there were lots of B Hollywood movies based around nuclear radiation. Everybody was scared of atomic bombs and, you know, what kind of mutations might happen. And so there were movies called Attack of the Giant Grasshopper and Attack of the Giant Caterpillar and Attack. And they were always trumped up in the previews. And, well, maybe this thing will be decent. So you'd go to see it, and the same plot was used over and over where, you know, some kind of weird creature was around, but you didn't get to see it. Then you saw a piece of it. Then it threatened the town drunk. Then it killed the town drunk. And still, nobody believed the town drunk when he talked about it, and nobody knew what killed him until, oh, some scientists would say, this looks like caterpillar slime.
Right.
And they would experiment, oh, it is caterpillar slime. And eventually, the National Guard would come in with flamethrowers and tanks and kill the thing at the end. So, and they just one after another. It was the same formula until on a college break I saw a picture that I didn't know anything about called, why am I drawing a blank on that? The one about creatures from the pod. The very first one. Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my gosh. There you go. Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time, and now I drew a gap maybe because my mind's on this this novel, but also because the title never quite seemed real appropriate, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You picture somebody actually snatching bodies, but instead it's just, you know, these crazy pods that assume the shape of some person and then kind of take over their identity. But it was scary as hell, and that movie, maybe more than any others, showed me that something really good could be done in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept saying in script discussions and whatever that if we could make a movie that had people coming out of the theater with those same shocked looks on their faces that I saw on the 8 o'clock audience for Invasion of the Body Snatchers, then we'd really have something. So
that became
the goal.
And you had a lot of societal themes in there that were really intrinsic in the 60s. Were those purposely put in, like the race relations and the family deterioration, or was it just so inside of, you know, your own experience that it just came out in the film?
Well, the racial implications were almost an accident because in the original script we didn't specify any race for the. In fact, he was called truck driver. He was, he was a truck driver and supposed to be, you know, an uneducated but intelligent and brave fellow. And Rudy Ritchie, who had played, he was a friend of ours and close associate, and had gotten great reviews at in the theater in Pittsburgh when he played the Hairy Ape. And, you know, he played the lead role in that. That was a William Bendix movie at one point. So Rudy had that kind of vitality and strength and charisma, and we thought he would be good for that role. But then George's girlfriend at the time, Betty Allen, suggested Dwayne because he was from Duquesne, Pennsylvania, right across the river from Pittsburgh, and he was teaching at Columbia and was coming home for Easter vacation. So he came in red, and we just thought he was really good. He was the best guy, and even Rudy agreed he should get the part. Well, Dwayne wasn't your tough, you know, street person
truck
kind
driver.
Of guy. He was more intellectual, and so that's how he played the part, and that's how, you know, the dialect, the rough kind of dialect that the truck driver would have had, we did away with that and played it more in character for Dwayne.
Mm-hmm. And you also played a lot of roles.
What was the other question about the race things?
Oh,
or
I was
something?
Asking about the societal
things.
Oh, well,
in family conflicts, I grew up in a family that was, my father was a brutal alcoholic. He was a Jekyll and Hyde. He was the best guy in the world when he was the best guy, and then he was the worst guy when he turned, and he would turn on a dime. So I grew up in that kind of family, always fighting at each other's throats and so on. And some of those same lines in there, like when we might not enjoy living together, but we but it's no use dying together. Those were the kinds of things my mother would say, you know, when they were in the throes of an argument. And so a lot of that got into that dialogue. And things like and I grew up in a rough mill town, Clareton, so I had my first fist fight when I was 5, so I was no stranger to recalcitrant, stubborn, angry people. You know, and things like, you know, well, go down the basement, you can be boss down there, I'm boss up here. I mean, we could have said that to each other when we were teenagers and, you know, arguing or fighting, so that kind of stuff got in there.
You were in the movie as well as a zombie, and you actually got set on fire. And that was before you had, I guess, a budget for any high protective suit or anything. How did that work?
Well, I've always been somewhat of a daredevil. I mean, we grew up that way, you know, challenging people and doing crazy things. and whatever, also the whatever it takes mentality of we were all going to do whatever it took to make a good movie, and we all gave 110%. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the night before we were going to shoot the Molotov cocktail sequence, I said to George that, you know, we're going to be throwing all these Molotov cocktails, and we've said that they're dead flesh and they go up pretty easy, and if nobody catches fire, we're going to look pretty stupid.
Right.
And we, you know, discussed the fact that, we didn't have an asbestos suit, we didn't have a stuntman, et cetera, et cetera, and I said, oh, hell, I'll do it. So I just put on my tight-fitting Levi jacket and jeans, and over that I pulled a rumpled old brown suit, because we had piles of stuff from the Goodwill store that when people came out to be zombies, you know, we could dress them up. And so I found a rumpled brown suit that was too big and it would come off easily, hopefully, and put that on over the Levi's. Then when we got ready to shoot, we set up the camera, and Carl Hardman made a puddle of gasoline around me. And once action was called, he threw a match into the puddle. He also made a gasoline go up my leg and into my back. So then he threw a match, the gas puddle ignited, the flames raced up my leg and back, and I just had the stagger zombie-like until I could feel my hair singeing.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I could roll over this hill where people were waiting with blankets to help smother the flames, or I could, you know, wriggle out of that loose-fitting suit. Which I don't think I had to do. They just had smothered it. And we got three takes, and I always remember Carl's there with his gloating look on his face. Everybody was so damn happy we were getting this great stunt for our low-budget movie. So, you know, it's exhilarating when you pull something like that off, and in movies, all kinds of movies, when the stunt people do their thing, you know, they always get this huge round of applause when it's successful, and it almost always is because they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. How did they think that it was black and white? How did they know what kind of makeup and blood would work that would show up for the film?
You know, we were all extremely inventive. And most of the things we did all through the years worked. You know, when we learned from scratch, but we were a really tight-knit production team by the time we made Night of the Living Dead, and we had our walls covered with awards for commercial work, you know, even in the International Film Festival in Cannes for commercials. We would sometimes beat out people like Stan Freberg, who had $100,000 budgets for commercials, and we maybe had $6,000 if we were lucky. So, and we just, all of us did everything. Yeah, and we knew exactly what it took to dress a set and block and pace action and so on so that it would be believable. And and our stuff had that professional pace to it, which is often lacking in many filmmakers. So, and that's one of the things we teach our students, and I don't know if you want to get into that yet, but
we can go ahead and talk about that. You're doing classes at Du Bois College with Russ Streiner.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the classes.
Well, it's Du Bois Business College in Du Bois, Pennsylvania, 100 miles north of Pittsburgh. And Russ and I are the master mentors, a term I came up with in trying to define and orchestrate the program. And so we have a day-to-day instructor right now, Ryan Haggerty, and he teaches the basics, but he's got a master's degree from Carleton College in filmmaking. He's very good. And then Russ and I give them the benefit of our 40-plus years' experience in virtually all aspects of the business, including the marketing and publicity and everything, because we still make deals all over the world, you know. And a lot of filmmakers don't do that because, I mean, they're kind of hired guns, and if they direct, they direct, and if they write, they write. But we, again, had, you know, founded a company from scratch and several companies along the way. And because Night of the Living Dead continues to land deals and get, you know, into new things, then Russ and I are the trustees of that corporation, and we handle the negotiations, the contracts, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of it that you don't get usually in film school, or at least not from people that have the kind of experience we do. And they learn everything from TV commercials on up, because the goal is to teach them things where they can actually get work, while even if they want to be the next Steven Spielberg, but how do you put groceries on the table in the meantime? And
right.
I always tell them, hey, you know, if you can go out and shoot a wedding video or commercial for a used car lot or whatever, it's better than flipping burgers or washing cars. And
mm-hmm.
they do go out and get work, you know.
What do you think is the biggest mistake a new director can make? A couple mistakes.
Biggest
one? What
do you
see all the time?
Weaknesses in the story. And mm-hmm. you know that, yeah, I know you said directors, but it kind of
all
starts
down to the story, basically.
Yeah, as far as horror, a lot of young people making horror films, and it's great that they do. It's a, you know, it's a good way to get a start if you can do something that makes a reputation for you. You can do what Sam Raimi did and what Tobe Hooper did and so on, and what we did, if you can come up with something unique enough and captures people's interest. But it can't just be some serial killer killing one person after another, or some, even if you come up with a fabulous idea for a movie monster of some type,
mm-hmm.
but then, you know, there have to be sympathetic characters who seem real, who are real and have real motivations and goals, and, you know, not cardboard characters, and the plot and the way the story evolves, it all has to be professional, and it has to have the right pace and suspense and plot and everything else going with it. And that, and a lot of times that's what's lacking,
mm-hmm.
those kinds of things. And then I think maybe the blocking and screen direction, those shot compositions, angles, all of that stuff can be learned. I'm not sure that the sense of pace can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it can be improved, but it almost seems to me like perfect pitch in singing. It's something you either have or you don't have. You know,
okay.
Like, I'm not really a good dancer. I don't have the greatest sense of rhythm. Somehow it doesn't compute. Like,
uh-huh.
But, you know, even though that's true, when it's on screen, I know right away what works, what doesn't work, what's a clinker, and what isn't. And for some reason, I have that sense of pace, and it's really important.
Okay.
And I
know we're,
okay.
The time goes so fast on this show, and we're kind of
mm-hmm.
getting toward the end already, but I want to make
okay.
sure that any projects that you have coming up that you can tell us, besides for Escape of the Living Dead, is there any other projects? I know you have a zombie comedy and some other things going on, so why don't you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah, I always have many things going at once, and you kind of have to if you're going to have a long career. But as you mentioned, the comedy Talk Cap a Zombie, All Hell Week breaks loose in the frat house of the Living Dead, and it's really funny and scary and so on, and campy at the same time. Almost had it financed by Gray Fredrickson, who was one of the producers of The Godfather, and then they got an $8 million picture in, and now they're doing that instead. And I think they may come back to Talk Cap a Zombie after they get done with this picture that they're working on. So that's going on. And one of the main things right now is the new stage play. It's called Night of the Living Dead Live, and it's being produced in Toronto with a really good creative team. And Russ and I are going. We already were in Niagara Falls, Canada, promoting it a few weeks ago, and a great crowd there. And that's where I met all the people. Russ had met them once before. And the director is Christopher Bond, who directed the Evil Dead stage play that made it to Broadway. So, and I mean, I really like the people. And now we're going to, in a couple of weeks, we'll be at the Festival of Fear, you know, the Rue Morgue thing in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge convention. We'll be with them there promoting. And it's supposed to open in the spring of 2013, and you can go online and just rather than me using up your time, if people want to check it out, it's Night of the Living Dead Live, and it's Nyctophobia Films. I'm sure you could just plug in Night of the Living Dead Live, and you'll learn about it.
And do you have a website that you want to give people for yourself, or so that they can?
Well,
look up
my website, I have a website, JohnRussoScaryTreasures.com, but right, it needs refurbished. It's okay to look at, but it's really outmoded, and everybody I pay to work on it takes the money and runs. But I have another guy that's really done some good work, but he can't get to working on the website till September because he's all booked up till then. So, but I have I'm on Facebook if anybody wants try friending me,
great.
And I do announce a lot of stuff there. And I just finished producing a CD for Chuck Corby, who's a very well known. He's known as a world-class soul singer and has had a long career. I made a movie with him initially titled Saloonatics, and it's being retitled The Mobster and the Soul Singer, and his new CD ties in with it. It's called Chuck Corby Sings the Mob Hits. So that's one of the new things, and you'll see that on my on the Facebook page. And if you want to go to chuckcorby.com,
okay, so, great. Well,
the movie got good reviews. Oh,
so
you were
quick.
Almost done?
Yeah, it goes so fast. I'm going to have to bring you back and do some more additional questions because I could talk to you all day. You've got lots of experience. But I thank you for coming on the show today. Any last thing that you want to say real quick?
If you're a filmmaker or a writer, keep writing, keep reading, keep working. Don't give up and learn as much as you can, and don't do it in a shallow way. Do it. Just involve yourself totally in learning the craft and developing the craft, and you'll get there. Maybe.
Keep trying. Okay.
There's some luck involved.
Well, I thank you again, John, for coming on, and I'm sure I will be talking to you soon, but thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And thanks.
Good luck with all your endeavors.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, we just talked to John Russo, legendary filmmaker, screenwriter. And like I said, we didn't have a whole lot of time to talk to him. It was a real short show today. But I may have to bring him back because he's a wealth of information. And as he said, you know, if you're a filmmaker, keep on trying, guys. Keep on working on it because you never know what's going to hit and take you to the next level. Just some quick show notes before we end today. Once again, this show has been nominated for Best Web Show, and I would really appreciate your vote. So go under womeninthearts.miami.com and vote for Indie Streak under Best Web Show. Also, like Indie Streak on Facebook. I'll be posting some castings and some exclusive information there that you can check out. And I will be doing a story probably online about this interview, some more additional information about John Russo and about Night of the Living Dead soon on my website, which is www.independentstreak.ning.com. And I post a lot of events and castings and different things on that show. So I'm sorry, on that website. So you want to check that out. And like I said, always, if you haven't heard any of these shows that I've done on Indie Streak here, you can go back and listen to the archives anytime, and you can hear the other directors, writers, et cetera, that I have interviewed as well. And you can also go back and listen to more of this show. But I thank you guys for tuning in today. The show is on Sundays at 1 p.m. If there are any changes or any information that you need to know, it will be here on the website, on my page. You'll see any additional information, including the voting information is up there right now. But there is a possibility that I may be in a movie next weekend. So if that happens, I will not have a show next weekend. But if not, I will have a show next Sunday at 1 p.m., but I will be letting you know, like I said, on the website here and also on my Facebook page. Okay, guys, and you never know who I'll be interviewing next, so keep tuning in. I thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.